It's time now for America in the Balance. Brought to you by Oklahomans for Sovereignty and Free Enterprise. And now your co-hosts, Amanda Teagarden and James Parsons.
And welcome, freedom-loving Oklahomans, to another hour of America in the Balance on Truth in Focus Internet Radio. I'm one of your hosts, Amanda Teagarden, in studio with James Parsons. Hi, James.
Good afternoon.
It's good to see you again.
It's been a while.
It has been a while, and we did not record for two Sundays, one because of illness, and the other Sunday was because there was a whole lot of snow in Oklahoma. We're broadcasting from Tulsa.
And the government was just not effective enough to get the snow away from us quick enough.
They were so bad at criticizing the mayor around here, they were calling it the mayor's Katrina. Everything gets compared to Katrina around here, but 30 years ago, Oklahoma, Tulsa, did not have snow plows, and we got 17 inches of snow in one day. And, of course, by now we have more than 30 snow plows, but it wasn't sufficient for that quantity, that amount of snow. We had buildings collapsing, those metal buildings and flat roofs leaking and all kinds of drama. And if you can believe it, James, you remember that people were actually in the casino when no one could drive.
Yes,
it was it's like the roof. This is breaking news. The roof is collapsing at the local casino, and we're looking at each other.
I had people at the office wondering if the nickel or the penny machines were the ones that got damaged, and they're really hoping that it wasn't either one of them.
Oh, you know people that go to the casinos?
Yeah, unfortunately, yes.
All right. Well, I'd like to direct your attention to our website. We'll get back to business here. It's ok-safe.com. That's Oklahomans for Sovereignty and Free Enterprise. ok-safe, S-A-F-E.com. We are privileged today to have as our guest Vicki Davis, who I consider one of the state's premier researchers. She's an independent researcher, well-versed, she digs into all the issues that she has come to understand. She's been a researcher for 10 years. Her website is channelingreality.com. It has nothing to do with channeling spirits. It has to do with bringing reality or speaking truth. Channelingreality.com. She is our guest, and we'll say hi. Vicki, are you there?
Hi, Amanda. Yes, I'm here.
It's good to have you back again. And before we get started with your discussion on what's been happening with Idaho, the China connection to Idaho, yes, Idaho, the United States, and hub zones, and your most recent research paper called How U.S. Territory Became a Land Bridge Between Two Bodies of Water, which is an intriguing title. James and I are going to talk about the Oklahoma legislative session. The 53rd legislature began on Monday, February 7th, and it started out with a dismal failure to institute any type of change to adopt a rule, the open government rule that was on Monday, February 7th, 2011. 53rd legislature, which is now predominantly Republican. We have a Republican female, who cares, but governor. And we had the State of the State address, first day of session, very formal. There's 5 hours of video that's available on it. A lot of it was clapping, hear the speech, sit down, and then they got down to the work. Before a legislative session begins, they must adopt the rules by which they will conduct themselves for the next 2 years. It's a two-year session. And James, were you able to listen live, or did you go in person? And
I didn't get to listen live. I went back and heard the streaming afterwards. The stream, not the screaming, but the streaming of the video afterwards.
There was probably some screaming on the inside when people were listening to it. What happened, if you go to the OK Save website, you can click on the blog, and there is there's a post there that explains how the Oklahoma House failed its first test. Well, the test was a lot of these legislators are new. There's like 20 new legislators, and there was this Republican sweep in across statewide offices, new Republican labor commissioner, lieutenant governor, all the offices,
And then a wide majority in the House and in the Senate.
And many of them campaigned on restoring limited government, more openness and transparency, smaller, smarter government, et cetera. And they needed the grassroots to conduct all of these elections and get elected. So there's 20 new legislators of the 101 in the Oklahoma House. So this was a test. The test was the rules that were in existence. There are no rules when they first open up. They bang the gavel. Their first call is to adopt these rules. Well, there were amendments to these rules. It's introduced like a bill, and it was H.R., House Resolution 1008. The author was Chris Steele, who is the current Speaker of the House, Republican Speaker of the House, and there were 37 amendments to that, indicating that there's desire amongst the body, the members of the House, to change these rules. Well, right off the bat, three rules amendments did get adopted, and then it got to the one that everybody was anticipating, and it was called the Open Government Amendments. There were two. One had to do with how bills are assigned to committee, but the second one was what we call the Big Kahuna. This is the one that would have opened up the legislative process, allowing all bills the opportunity to get a hearing in the committees. For those who are not familiar with the legislative process, each legislator introduces a certain number of bills. They are introduced in the first first and second reading is what a formality of, and at the second reading they are distributed like a pack of cards to committees. Well, what the practice has been is for those committee chairmen to kill bills and never allow certain bills to get a hearing. So a legislator can have a bill, and the committee chairman, who's not elected by that home district, can stop a bill. So this amendment was to correct that.
And usually the idea is that, A, we don't have enough time to listen to all the bills, so the chairman has the power to maybe not listen to a bill that they feel may not be worthy enough for a hearing. I mean, is that correct, Amanda?
Right.
Okay. And then also the other argument would be that, we can get into certain arguments, but that seems to be the general argument. But unfortunately, or I guess in our case, fortunately, some of the Republicans actually played out their card and really told us what the current rules were going to be as far as picking and choosing which bills and what it actually does. And I thought that was the most alarming of the whole situation. I mean, we actually got to hear some Republicans really explain to us what they really what their thoughts are, but how they feel about their constituents back in their own districts.
Representative Don Arms comes to mind, who is a personable representative. He's got an open door policy, and a lot of Oklahoma is rural, and which is very beneficial, which is a good thing. There's a lot of common sense in the rural areas. More common sense than there are in the urban areas, come to think of it. But he made the comment, and when he was debating against the open government amendment, which was presented by Representative Charles Key from House District 90, he said, "Now, listen, members, we all have this experience from those people back home that see us in the coffee shop that say there ought to be a law, and you all know who I'm talking about."
Well, I have it actually transcripted, so I would love to tell you exactly how he said it.
What did Don Arms say?
First of all, I love how he starts off and says, "Let me be painfully honest with you." Now, when a politician says that, you really don't think he really will be. But in this case, in our case, he actually was. He is, and if you want open government, here it is. We all have constituents in our district that may not be the brightest and the best, for lack of another term. They may not understand the things we see in this chamber, the political process of making laws. A legislator meets with a constituent at a coffee shop, and that constituent says, "There ought to be a law." Well, daggummit, there ought to be a law. It's ridiculous, he goes on and says. Wouldn't you agree they expect us to go take it up to the Capitol and try to pass it? Then at that point, the best thing for everybody's concern is for us to kill the bill somewhere. How do you address that, Senator Representative Keyes?
Well, what he was saying was that I'm too chicken to tell my constituent, you know, let's sit down and discuss this, and this is going to be bad policy, and perhaps we already have a law that's about it. And by the way, don't you think we have too many laws? And actually, dealing with the situation back home, Representative Arms said that it is up to the chairman's discretion to make those decisions. So he would be hiding behind the skirt of the chairman. Well, what happens, those who have been looking at legislation long enough now realize that it is a political agenda that must be fulfilled in the legislature, and they did not want to give up the ability to filter out the bills that are in contrast or would work against the political agenda, which comes down in this case from the governor.
Well, Key also had a very good response to that, and it simply is this. You need to trust the members. I mean, that is
the committee. Right.
That is the simple message is that honestly, the leaderships do not trust the members who are a representative of the people to make the decisions on what bills need to be heard or which ones will need to be passed and what don't and which ones do not need to be passed.
That's true. The other argument that you need to listen to is the debate, the almost 10-minute debate by Representative Dan Sullivan, who is a Republican from House District 71 in Tulsa, which is establishment. He has now been promoted to floor leader, who gets to decide the floor calendar. And his 10-minute argument, including, you know, we don't have time. We have big things to do. We don't have time to be wasting on frivolous activities and frivolous bills. We have too many bills to hear. And he used the example of one bill that was introduced by a senator a couple years ago that was requesting or requiring cloth napkins in barbecue restaurants. Well, of course, that bill didn't advance or get anywhere. It was an example of a stupid bill, but he was using that to characterize all the bills that somebody like Representative Key wanted to introduce that are big issues, big policy, and constitutional. And then he himself has the gall, when you start to look at how many bills he's introduced 32 bills himself, one of which is commending Turkey, not the food,
right.
The country, the Muslim, the 98% Muslim country. So it's
now this is Dan Sullivan that has introduced that bill.
Dan Sullivan has introduced
the one that is against frivolous bills, right?
Right.
Okay.
HCR.
I just want to make sure we got that clear.
Dan Sullivan's Turkey bill is a turkey. Okay. So now we're ready to, if you can go to the online poop, I think you posted a comment on that.
Yeah, some of the things that I've transcribed on there, like, is it Lyman? Is that his name? Representative Lyman, L-I-E-B?
Liebman.
Liebman. One of my favorite things that he says is, my goodness, we got to stop bills like Oklahoma printing their own money and not using the federal dollars anymore. I thought that one was kind of a funny one. But there are a lot of, I just posted a lot of the transcripts that was said during that debate so that people can actually see or with their own eyes just what some Republicans think about their constituents back home.
Not too much. So it's the online poop, and if you go to the OK Safe blog from the website, there's one that's it's called The OK House Fails Its First Test. Okay, Vicki, thank you for listening to all the local politics there, and let's get on to our guest. And Vicki, just for those who have not heard you on this show before, could you please just touch on the issue of where what your research has found through what you call Trojan triangles, the hub zones, and then we'll get to your U.S. territory. Maybe let me back up a little bit. What's happening with Idaho and China? What's this going on?
Well, our governor, Butch Otter, has made a series of trips to China, which is what, you know, called attention to, well, it's not what called attention for me, but it, for a lot of people, it woke them up as to what is going on in Idaho, and which is that Idaho, the entire state of Idaho, has been designated as a targeted employment area, meaning that they can basically they're selling the state of Idaho, and they're doing it via the EB-5 in employment-based visas. And what those visas are investor visas for either $500,000 or $1 million. A foreign investor can buy a visa and become a U.S. citizen. And that money, either the person can invest it themselves, or they can invest it in an EB-5 regional center. And this is where it gets kind of complicated, because the system that has been set up, it's kind of a layered system of zoning, you know, where the area in Boise, it's an intermodal commerce zone. It's also a work-based learning zone. It's also an EB-5 regional center, and they were considering establishing a foreign trade zone.
All this in the Boise, Idaho area?
Yes, uh-huh. In the same area. I mean, they can layer this zoning. It's almost like building a foundation for the system that I call the Trojan Triangle. And I had to give it a name because there are so many elements to it that I needed a name to be able to refer to it. So I called it Trojan Triangle.
The triangle, the three points of the triangle are government, education, and transportation, or business?
Community. It's education, transportation, and community.
Community. And government is included in the community?
Yes.
All right. And you all, Eagle Forum, wrote a letter to your legislature.
We did. Now I forget what I said in that letter, but we told them, and I'm going to have to find it.
Well, I'm looking here. It says, "Dear Idaho State Legislators, in the past several days it's become clear to us that business as usual is not going to stop the agenda that is bringing down our country around our ears. What is clear to us is that either the state legislators and state government officials don't understand the big picture of what's happening in our country, or they don't care, and they intend to profit from it on the way down. If the Idaho state legislators do care about saving our state and our nation, here is what they will do. They will put a moratorium on all legislation until they can study the big picture of strategic, economic, and social war that is being waged on the people of this country." And it goes on, they will put a hold on Idaho Department of Commerce funds and put the employees on furlough until they have time to study the subversive activities in collusion with the activities of the governor's office. So this is addressing Governor Otter, O-T-T-E-R, and COPE or something like that, what he's engaged in.
The Commission on Privatization and Efficiency.
Yes.
Yeah.
I didn't mean to throw you off on what we were talking about, but...
That's okay. I should have brought that up. It's just I've done so many radio spots, and I've been writing so much, on this that it's hard to keep track of what I've written. But I did find the letter, and we did send that. We put it in the box of each one of the legislators. And the reason why we did that is because this Trojan Triangle system that I defined, regardless of whatever it is that you want to call it, you can call it economic development, but it's really more than that. But the selling of Idaho to the communist Chinese, which is really what he's doing, the legislators really have to put a stop to that.
They do, and there's actually a website that is promoting Meridian, Idaho, in China for investment by Chinese investors. Isn't that correct?
Mm-hmm. And the area is called the Core, and what it is, it's in an intermodal commerce zone, and it is an education zone, a work-based learning zone. And so, it's connected to the University of Idaho, and it's connected to St. Luke's Hospital as the anchor, which is the largest employer in Boise at this point. And when it came to my attention was back in May, when a delegation of 23 people from the China came over to take a look at the facilities at the core to see if they want to invest their money there. The core is also an EB-5 regional center, so they could invest $1 million each and buy American citizenship at the same time.
The Chinese are apparently very interested in a lot that's happening in Idaho. I'm looking at your other article called Red Alert: Do We Need the Red Communist Chinese Government as a Partner in Our Energy Grid? So not only are they involved in the core in Meridian, Idaho, but are they engaged in also, this is this Coeur d'Alene Press, in your Chinese company, in Cinemac, is that what it was called?
Yeah, Cinemac is actually a company that is owned by the government of China. It's a state-owned asset. On their org chart, the Communist Party of China is represented in a box that's higher than the CEO of Cinemac. And you know how important the position is on an org chart. Well, the Communist Party is above the CEO of Cinemac. And that company wants to come to Boise and go, you know, start up in business. They're looking at Idaho as being a good opportunity for them because it's a rural state, and so there's lots of room to build.
And so, is that near a highway system?
Well, it's right in down, it's right downtown in the capital city.
Oh.
Where they want to, yeah, they want to be the manager or the owner of the foreign trade zone. Apparently that the Boise Airport Commission is considering putting in.
And is your government promoting this as public-private partnership or helping to reduce the size of government or make government smaller, smarter, and faster? Are you hearing those terms?
They're selling it to the public on the idea of jobs, of course. Everything is jobs, jobs, jobs. You'd think that you know, it was the job of government to create jobs, you know, and what they should be doing is creating the environment where American citizens can create jobs, you know, and not going to foreign countries and looking for foreigners to invest money here, you know.
Which is what they're doing. I have to search into the issue of Turkey and the Turkic nations to see if there's any effort to have foreign investment in Oklahoma, since Representative Sullivan wants to commend them, including the Turkic nations. All right. So you have layered zoning designations in certain areas. You have foreign investment in particular areas, including your infrastructure, your utility grid, a smart grid, and you have possibly been designated as an inland port. Is that correct?
Well, that was the interesting thing that I found out in doing this research, is that the airports can be designated as a customs port of entry. And the legislation in Idaho that defined intermodal commerce zones, which are around the transportation hubs. Anytime you have two forms of transportation coming together, you have that is an intermodal area. They can define that as an intermodal commerce zone, and it turns out that in Idaho law, they define an intermodal commerce zone as being an inland port. So when you have a foreign trade zone and a customs office and it's an inland port, basically you've set up a maritime jurisdiction inland.
Vicki, would you mind sending me a link to that particular bill in Idaho law, that statute in Idaho law, when we get done, or at some point in time? And I will be checking the Oklahoma statutes, because I believe that in our legislature or in our statutes, I think there is going to be, they may move in the airport in Oklahoma City, I think, to designate this as an inland port. I think we're going to have to do some research on that. We've got one more minute till the bottom of the hour. You've written a post on your website called Inland Port Maybe, and we would direct your our listeners' attention to that. I'm going to ask you to hold on, Vicki, through the bottom of the hour. You're listening to America in the Balance on Truth in Focus Internet Radio. We'll be right back.
Do you need to promote your business on the Internet? The Truth in Focus Radio Network reaches listeners locally in Tulsa, Oklahoma, and all across the United States. The shift is on from traditional media to Internet marketing. Stay on the cutting edge with your business. Advertise with us today. Email radio at truthinfocus.org. You heard the word, so will they. Email us at radio at truthinfocus.org.
Kenyon State Wireless is your hands-on source for design, sales, service, and installation of the best land mobile two-way radio systems. Check us out on the web at kenyonstatewireless.com or call us for specific information at 866-458-4772, 866-458-4772. Kenyon State Wireless. When you're serious about communication.
And welcome back to the second half of America in the Balance on Truth in Focus Internet Radio. This is Amanda Teagarden in studio with my co-host James Parsons. We're both of OK Safe. That's Oklahomans for Sovereignty and Free Enterprise. Our website is ok-safe.com. You can check on James's blog site, which is the Online Poop. And our special guest today is Vicki Davis, who is in Idaho. Her website is channelingreality.com, and we've been talking about the layering of different zone designations within the state, particularly in Boise and Meridian, and the investment by China into the infrastructure and other investment opportunities, actions in Meridian, Ohio, Idaho, and in their energy grid, and the actions of their governor, whose name is Butch Otter. She's also written an article called The U.S. Territory, which is a landmass between two bodies of water. And Vicki, if you could give us an overview of what this article is about.
Well, most of it is just definitions of what these terms mean, because this system is complicated by the fact that all of these terms and all of these legal fictions that they've come up with in law are not really well known to people. I mean, everybody's heard of a foreign trade zone, but what does that mean? You know, what does it really mean? And so a lot of that document is just defining what the terms mean. And then I explain how they have built this system to be able to basically go from body of water to body of water over our highway system with the goods never entering the United States. So basically they have created an unbroken chain of international transportation through the center of our country without entering the country. And that's kind of a bizarre concept, but when you look at what the definition of a foreign trade zone is, it is restricted territory. It's not considered, it's considered foreign soil in terms of customs law, meaning that the owner of the foreign trade zone can store goods meant for international shipment in that zone, but it never enters United States territory for customs purposes.
So we don't really have any kind of legal recourse while those goods are here if they're in a foreign trade zone.
That's right. Now they say on their website that if a law is broken, that all local laws, local and state laws, do apply. But since those zones are federal zones, that are supervised by Customs and Border Patrol, your local sheriff can't just go busting in there and, you know, look and see what's in there. He has to be invited in there. And if a crime has been committed in a zone, it's the Customs and Border Patrol people who determine whether it's a federal crime or a state crime, or even if there was a crime. So it really puts it all on Customs and Border Patrol to decide what goes on in the zones.
How many foreign trade zones are there in the United States?
The last number that I saw was 257, but we don't know how many applications there are. And another thing about the foreign trade zones is that you can have sub-zones attached to a foreign trade zone, but it doesn't have to be adjacent to the trade zone. It can basically be, you know, anywhere, at least as what I read. I could be wrong on that, but I didn't see any limitation in terms of distance away from the foreign trade zone that the subzone could be. So you know, you could have subzones everywhere, and each subzone can have multiple businesses in the subzone. So, you know, we have no idea really how many businesses are affected, how many of these things have been defined.
When an area has been designated as a zone in law, then certain things become effective jurisdictionally, correct?
Right.
Laws, rules, regulations. And certain things apply in those zones. Some of these are called empowerment zones, hub zones, enterprise zones. There's another zone that I'm missing here. But these have a special designation, and either they get tax credits for businesses located there and waivers on ad valorem taxes. So they are costly to the state to create a zone.
But they do that in order to encourage that certain business that they want inside that zone.
The chosen business.
Right. Mm-hmm. And are you also seeing where they are using some type of government legislation or something to also encourage certain educational training for a particular business inside of a hub zone?
Yes, they're mainly technology-based, but for all of the employers in the area, they do something called a cluster study. And the cluster study does a study of all the employers in the area and their supply chain. And they offer customized worker training in these zones. So not only is there no property tax benefit to having the zone because they're tax exempt, but the state also subsidizes jobs that are created in the zones, and they offer customized worker training in the zones. I mean, so the taxpayer is getting nailed every which way but loose, you know, in this system of the work-based learning in the intermodal commerce zones. It's really quite a scam.
It is a scam. You and I have spoken before, and we've had a guest on talking about the SCANS, the Secretary's Commission on Achieving Necessary School Skills, and under Clinton, the United States Department of Education moved toward this Soviet-style education model, polytechnic training, which was a school-to-work model. Under Governor Frank Keating, a Republican, our state of Oklahoma adopted the school-to-work model, and these schools in certain areas are designated by these zones to produce workers for a certain category of job. I saw a list that was probably the most revealing, which actually came from Iowa. And Ken Sellers received it at work from a connection that he has in Iowa because he was born there. And what it was a list of the high schools by high school and what category of worker each of those high schools was to produce. And it was the most blatant and very revealing admission of the education system in the United States. Is we here in Oklahoma hear that we're big on the aerospace industry and another category, and so the schools are designated to produce people, it's science and technology, which is really their service entry-level jobs, but it's supposed to be, it's being marketed as high tech. Union Public Schools is one of the largest school districts in the state, heavily taxed, just passed a $21 million bond to make their high school a collegiate high school, which means your high schoolers are getting community college level education, but it is more geared towards school to work. By eighth grade, they have to pick their career course, and they're educated to attain just that level of education for that particular career, which the Department of Labor had. So, Vicki, what you're describing has been a long time coming in that it is a topstone central planning model for the United States, that the schools are to produce the workers that the Department of Commerce has determined will be necessary for the future. They will live and operate within zones. States apparently have been designated as the state to produce a certain kind of worker in this scenario. And the through these zones and these designations, we are, in essence, as you said, a landmass between two trading partners, and we're a pass-through state, a country. Is that kind of the synopsis?
Yes, just a land mass between two bodies of water. Because of the corridor system and the way that they've defined these zones. If parents understood this, what they've done is they've redefined the schools to be supply chain of labor. They're not going to be producing educated people. They are going to be producing trained workers. And there's a big, big difference in that.
Is that being marketed as we're producing people who can thrive in a knowledge-based economy?
Yes. Yeah. And I need to get a better definition of knowledge, but it has to do with technology. You see, what they did once they put the internet online is that the technology companies created this big illusion of how the world was going to change because of telecommunications, and it has to an extent, but not that much, you know, that we need to reorient everything in life towards everybody being and living and working on the computer, you know.
Which we are.
We are, because, we're trying to figure out what they're doing, but they confused the business plans of the technology corporations with our national policy. And what's good for the technology corporations is not necessarily good for people. And so that really is the source of most of the problems that we're having. And the thing is that the technology and the changes that have been made to our government and to the world are, for the most part, hidden from people, because all of this that's going on is taking place in the virtual world and not really in the physical world that we live in.
I was explaining to somebody, or describing to somebody, is that electronic medium is a contradiction in that it does not exist, and yet it exists forever. And I said that because it can go away it's just electrical impulses. If people understood how computer systems work, it's a series of either on or off, a series of zeros and ones in certain configurations, and that's how the data is communicated. And it's by electrical impulse or fiber optic cables, etc. And it is just an impulse. It is not there. It's not physical or tangible. On the other hand, and it can all go away in a poof. On the other hand, because the nature of electronics, that if we type or write something and it goes down, somebody else still has it. So it's an interesting comparison. It doesn't exist, and yet it exists forever.
And the people that are doing the central planning of our society, by that I mean our the redesign of our schools, the redesign of our highways, the redesign of our healthcare system, they've redesigned everything. But those people use models. And in a model is a perfect world as they define it to be. We, on the other hand, are living out here in the real world, in the physical world, and we're being impacted by their imperfect models.
Which they believe are perfect because it's perfectly controlled.
Right, so, and they're trying to change us to fit their model because they have a perfect model. And so if we only just change to do what they're telling us to do inside their model, then everything will be just, you know, really great.
Well, that's the progressives' desire, is that perfection is achieved through more regulation and more control. When you're the perfect example of why these computer models do not work is Al Gore's hockey stick, which was a model of predicting
man-made
global warming and indicating how the Earth was getting warmer and warmer and that we all need to just, in essence, shrivel up and die, except Al Gore. And it was proved to be false in a faulty model, and it's that type of error left unchecked is dictating to a great extent how people live. I have met people, young people, who have actually decided to not have children because they actually believe there are the population scares because of what they have been taught. These types of activities have real world, as you call it, real world impact, is that a young couple who should be having children has changed their very lives to accommodate a lie.
But what I like to say is, speaking about the population idea, is that some of these models are so imperfect that it goes against Scripture.
It does.
And in one area, especially about population, is that one of the first commandments given to man and woman was to populate the world.
Be fruitful and
be
multiply.
Be fruitful and multiply. And so these models in the central planning community want to reverse the truth of God and want to control population and then restrict the growth of it so they're able to control it better instead of living what God has us to do, to live a free life and to live a fruitful life, if we can put it in those terms. But my question for you, Vicki, is how have you seen any concrete areas in which transportation, the core is that the transportation, community, and education, in some areas in which you have actually seen some concrete moving areas in which that has happened up in your region?
What you mean in terms of smart transportation?
Sure.
Well, they've started redesigning the highways a little differently. I mean, especially with the overheads, you know, where the lights are and things, they're a lot bigger, a lot more expensive. And, of course, you see these towers everywhere, these communications towers. But on my website, I have a something that I wrote called the History of the NAFTA Superhighway. And I have links to a lot of the design documents for the smart highway system. So if anybody is interested in seeing that, it's under the North American Union section, and it's the NAFTA Superhighway History. There's also one called something about high-tech highways, where you can look at the history there of how they put these designs together.
And what is the purpose of these designs? What are they saying is the goal in which they're trying to pursue by redesigning these highways and streets?
By the way, we better define they. The they means the government policies.
Government policies, correct.
Policymakers.
Well, it actually started out as a regional transportation study in Texas called Mobility 2000. And they were apparently given the go-ahead to do total blue sky, what would you do in your wildest dreams if you could put all the technology possible into the highways? So when they finished that project, then the Department of Transportation then sponsored a study to actually turn the those concepts in that regional planning study into a national strategic plan for the intelligent vehicle highway system,
which is available on the OKSAFE website, also in addition to yours. And that means technology and your cars are linked.
Yes, yes, your vehicle will communicate with the highway, and they always use the example, well, you'll be able to get road reports wherever you are. And you know, every time I hear that, it makes me laugh, because I don't know, is it worth spending trillions, and it is trillions of dollars, just so you can get, you know, roadmap information or road conditions in your car?
Right. Anytime they give a report that, in literal terms, that means we have an eye on a situation, which means that they have an eye somewhere, so they can obviously see where there's problems that will arise, which means that there's a consistent surveillance that is going on.
Yes, it's total domain awareness is what it is. It means sensors everywhere, and pretty soon they'll be able to charge you by the mile for insurance, and they'll be able to tell you where you drove last week, you know, for the last month, you know.
Right, and California has also looked at even charging taxes by the mile. Because they're experiencing a revenue shortfall, and because of all these cars that are now more fuel efficient, they're not getting the tax revenue back from them filling up anymore, and so they're looking at putting a meter onto your car in which that tracks your mileage. So now you're able to be taxed on how many miles you drive per month or per year or something like that. So, I mean, so there is already movement in that direction that we've seen in California.
Yeah, that's an interesting idea, too, because there are all kinds of computerized sensors on your car, too. I mean, they could charge you a penalty because your catalytic converter isn't working well enough, so they could charge you a penalty. I mean, it boggles the mind what can be done. I mean, they can tax you so much that you'll end up just walking, which I think is actually the goal.
No, you're supposed to take mass transit or the light rail.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, like out here in Idaho, they don't even have any public transportation here in Twin. They did have a little bus system in Boise. But out here in the West, I mean, you know, the distances are just too great, and even if they had public transportation, they wouldn't get enough volume to make it worthwhile. So.
Just so you know that, James, we're going to be looking at this, and we're talking about enterprise zones, et cetera, on today's broadcast. I checked the Oklahoma Legislature website, and you can see all the bills that are introduced, and we have two that are introduced that have the same name: Public Finance Empowerment and Enterprise Zone Utilization Act of 2011 by Richard Morissette, who happens to be a Democrat, but he's also in the Transportation Committee. And there's another one here that's got a zone in the in the title, and this is a good one. And this one is Foreign Trade Zone, Cimarron County Revocation of Status. Cimarron County, if you live in Oklahoma, is way out west in the panhandle, and it apparently has been designated as a foreign trade zone. And somebody is on the ball here, because Representative Gus Blackwell from that county has introduced HJR 1016, which revokes Cimarron County's foreign trade zone status. So this ought to get really interesting. We have two bills, instituting Empowerment Zone Activity Act, and another one to take back a foreign trade zone designation. And I tell you, because they didn't pass the rule that allows open government, one of those bills will get a hearing and the other one won't. want to bet which one's going to get a hearing in the committee. Vicki, we've only got a few minutes left before the end of the hour, and what would you like people to understand first?
I think everybody should be trying to understand as much as they can about these zones and the education system and everything that they're doing in them. It's complicated, but this is so important because this is how they are centrally planning the economy. And in order for you to understand how this central planning is working, you really need to dig in and understand this zoning structure and the things that they're doing inside the zones, because it's happening in all of the states, because it's cookie cutter. You know, that's the way central planning works.
If people don't think this is happening in Oklahoma, I want to remind them that we have moved toward and are continuing to move toward virtual courts in Oklahoma, or a paperless court system. And again, that's to bring the courts into, as they say, the 21st century, and to create efficiency. What this allows for is ultimately you will not be facing your accuser. They'll be on a TV screen. And court documents.
Yeah, and how will you know if it's a real judge? And how will you know if it's a real jury? I mean, you know, there's so many questions because of what they can do with technology. You remember Max Headroom?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, that was quite a few. That was, 10, 12 years ago?
That was in the early 80s?
Right. And technology is so much better now. I mean, if we allow them to make all of the administration virtual, then basically we will be living inside of a virtual reality that we won't know what's real and what isn't, and we will have no control over anything. It'll be a virtual prison is what it will be.
When you're describing you're not knowing if it's a real judge or a real jury or where they're located, if it's electronic, the judge and jury actually could be anywhere. And if we move toward regional court systems, that's kind of opening the door toward these courts actually being regional, could cross state lines.
And when you say regional courts and regional services, it just screams every time a politician says to me that they want to, what's the word they want to use?
Create efficiency.
Well, not create efficiencies, but necessarily, what's the word? Consolidating services.
Consolidating.
And that is a catchphrase that always throws me, because I think of this regionalism anytime I hear consolidated of services. And then also when you hear our politicians scream things like, we want to keep our children here, make sure they're well educated so they can go into the fields and the jobs that are in this area. And it just reams of this hub zone idea. And this education source that they use in order to facilitate these hub jobs.
They are. And I will tell you that, you know, you don't know where that judge could be eventually if they set this up. But, I talked to a tech guy about my McAfee program, antivirus, and that guy was in South India. Vicki, that's the day. You're McAfee. That doesn't sound Indian. Anyway, we are at the bottom of this hour, and we thank you for being our guest. We're going to have you back. This is a big subject. Thank you for listening, and as always, we say, God bless.